Hey, everybody, welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie that was made by New World Pictures and movies that were nearly made by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Call me Hulk.
And Erica.
Hey, everybody.
And we are in Sci-Fi July Presents Dystopian Summer, where we are going to talk about some of the dystopian movies released by New World Pictures and this one, which is a nearly New World movie. And why is Escape from New York, John Carpenter's Escape from New York from 1981, why is it a nearly New World? Well, because this movie was made right following New World Pictures putting out Battle Beyond the Stars. And James Cameron pitched the crew, because he was working with the special effects department that was at the lumberyard that Roger Corman owns, and he pitched them as a team to work on Escape from New York and underbid everyone, because most people were charging $1 million, and they did it for $360,000, which for a $5 million movie was a huge deal. We talked to RJ Kaiser, who was an editor of Battle Beyond the Stars, and he told us about working on this movie.
And again, this was part of the reason why the crew got the job, was because Carpenter wanted to do this without opticals, without resorting to optical composites. So everything had to be original negative.
Okay.
And so that's why we got it, because Cameron had convinced Carpenter that this crew knew how to do that kind of work. Because that's what they were, because that's what they were doing on Battle Beyond the Stars.
Right.
Even though ultimately, we didn't do that.
Right. You were just saying you did do opticals.
Yes. We did a ton of opticals.
But not only that, Robert Remy was running Avco Embassy. He would go on to run New World Pictures once Roger Corman sold it. And of course, his name is used as Tom Atkins' character's name in the movie as well. Of course, this movie came about because John Carpenter had made The Fog for Avco Embassy, and it was a huge success. And they said, what else do you want to do? As far as the story as I remember hearing, John Carpenter ran out to his car and had the script in his trunk. He had written this script when he went to USC and was like, how about Escape from New York? They said, let's do it. But they wanted to do rewrites. They brought in Nick Castle. He added a lot of different stuff to it. Nick Castle, of course, the guy who played The Shape in Halloween.
Right.
And directed Tag, the assassination game for New World Pictures.
So when we do the Avco Embassy podcast, Tag the Assassination Game can be nearly Avco Embassy. Got it. Just want to make sure our world, the universe that we're creating is coming all together.
I actually really like that idea. And that could be our soft landing once we wrap this one up. In the year 2035.
I won't need a soft landing, guys. We're gonna hit stop on the last episode. I'm just gonna dissolve. I'm just gonna wind's gonna blow, and I'm just gonna start to just break apart.
She just turned to dust. She can only live through this podcast.
That's it.
It's like she turned her eyes back to Sodom and Gomorrah and turned into a pillar of salt.
That's right.
Tony Randall, who eventually will go on to direct Hellbound Hellraiser 2. He worked on this movie. Mainly he did, I think, just the shot of the helicopter flying by the Brooklyn Bridge and the map painting, and he was in charge of the blinking lights.
I always loved that scene. I loved the way it looked. I recognized, even as a kid, that there was a map painting, but it looked it was so well done. It looked so believable. And listen, how this became a nearly New World really doesn't matter to me. 5 years of podcasting. 5 years of podcasting has come to this pinnacle moment where we are talking about one of my most beloved movies. So
Mark and I have loved this movie since we were very young, and we recorded it. This is going to get real, real towny, but we recorded it because we did not have cable. So we had to have bunny ears, and we recorded it off KTLA. And we recorded it at the time which Snake Plissken lands in New York, and he's walking around the theater, and he eventually finds Joe Buck Flower, who has the wristband for the president.
Mr. President.
I'm the president.
sure I'm the president. I knew when I got this thing, I'd be president.
He's walking around that theater, which, by the way, was shot inside the Wiltern, because in the early 80s, the Wiltern was in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The inside, not the outside. The outside is still St. Louis. The inside is the Wiltern, because at the time, the Wiltern was a disaster. So people were renting it out. Alan Arkus shoots Get Crazy there inside the Wiltern.
I didn't realize that.
Now it has been fixed up and it's a regular venue in Los Angeles again. Anyway.
But just to punctuate how many times Ryan and I did watch this, there was a summer that we would go to a babysitter's house in the morning and she would pick us up and we would come home to have lunch. And every day that we came home to have lunch, we would watch this TV recording of Escape from New York. And I just want to clarify, too, what Ryan said about when the movie started for us is true. In other words, we didn't have like the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Right.
And it didn't
The first meeting
matter.
With Hulk and all that stuff was kind of a little bit, but we didn't give a crap. We were
didn't care. It was perfect, even though we were missing the setup of how this thing all got rolling. And I didn't realize that was the Wiltern Theater, although that makes a lot of sense now. And you talked about the outside being St. Louis. Now, I recognize a lot of people that watch movies or TV shows today that are set like in New York or Philadelphia or you know, major U.S. cities. And a lot of them are shot in Toronto or Vancouver. And it can be really frustrating when they're talking about U.S. streets and you look at the street and you're like, that's not the street. But because they were able to shoot in a part of St. Louis, I believe that had caught on fire. And John Carpenter had convinced the city of St. Louis to shut down the power grid at night so that they could shoot it there. Mm-hmm. I recognize it's not New York, but that makes this movie, because it's real buildings, real set. It looks really beat up in a way that no studio would be able to pull that off. Now, I know with CGI we can do that now, but it's really what made Escape from L.A. look so terrible.
Yes, I was about to say, you could shoot in a studio, and if you did do it in a studio, you would have Escape from L.A.
right, which just always looked fake. Every scene, every setting looked fake, and this movie did not. And
what looked totally real, though, was him shooting 10 baskets in 10 seconds or whatever. You know, like that
right,
part looks that's very real.
That final shot that Snake Plissken, when he does the is it he throws behind the basketball behind him? Mm-hmm. Kurt Russell really did make that.
I'm sure he did. It's still impossible.
The first time? Probably
no,
not.
Probably not.
But he prided himself on actually making that shot.
Right. And that was the reunion with John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, because this is kind of the end of their partnership. They make a bunch of these movies together. And Escape from New York is sort of the last one they made, at least that John Carpenter directed. They work together still on Halloween 3, but then she goes her own way and he makes The Thing and she produces The Dead Zone. So they both did pretty well for themselves.
Arguably, I think she had the bigger hit when it came out in The Dead Zone.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Erica, when did you first watch Escape from New York?
I don't know. I don't have... I don't have quite the... This is going to disappoint you both greatly. I don't quite have the attachment
or the memory
or the knowledge or the rewatch.
You didn't...
I don't know. I've seen it, but I don't remember when. Okay. I saw it at some point. It's enjoyable. Isn't it fun? But...
So you do... It's a movie you like, but you didn't... grow up loving this movie. Or
correct. Yeah. I wasn't trying to record it at any point. I again, this is going to be upsetting. I didn't fight to preserve it in any way or to capture it and have it to rewatch. I just, I have seen it and it was enjoyable then. It was enjoyable now. Boy, oh boy, here we go. Escape from New York.
Well, you don't have to have loved it and watched it 1,000 times like Mark and I did as kids.
Like on this episode, it would have benefit me if I had those, though, if I could.
But let me ask you quickly, Erica, if Henry Thomas was in this movie, would you have watched it a lot?
Well, I Maybe. I don't know. This was one that I just
think... was not the quest, is what he's trying to say for you.
I mean, what is? But
Cloak and Dagger, perhaps. Yeah,
I really can't remember when I first saw this.
I'm going to take a guess. Just because I would imagine it's probably around the time that Escape from LA came out.
When did that come out?
In the 90s, like 96.
Okay. Good guess. I can't validate it if that's true or not. But I think I like that. I like where your head is at. Okay. That sounds fun. Okay. Sure, the 90s.
Sure. Like, not that we're at final questions yet, but...
We're not doing final questions, but go ahead.
But which character do you think Henry Thomas would have been best suited to play?
Oh, ooh. Brains, right? Or the...
Oh,
like,
Brains. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Brain.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Hmm. Okay. Hmm. I was going with Cabby, but
you thought Ernest Borgnine? You can't replace him.
There you go. Way. There you go. Meet my outrage.
No, I was going to say
it would have been weird too, because I think Henry Thomas was like 12 when this movie was made, so right. It would have been a real casting yeah. swing to go ahead and
weird.
Put him.
Yeah. It'd been weird to put him in this, but I would have said, what about the guy that's around the camp that's like, Brain?
Specific orders, Brain, was for me not to let no one go inside.
You know that guy? Right. Like, that's where you put in Henry Thomas. Right. You put him in that guy.
Right, right.
You might be able to sneak him in there. It's dark. Who knows? You know what I mean? Yeah, he's young, but...
But I was thinking more Brain because he's like, he's a cute guy. He was a very cute kid.
Okay.
And I'm guessing if he's in it, he's going to be grown up. And so he's a good-looking guy, but I think he could get away with playing... He's a good-looking guy, but he's not Kurt Russell. I mean,
sure, sure,
sure.
So sorry, Henry Thomas, if you're listening.
he just turned off the podcast.
He just said, unsubscribe.
Great, just lost his subscription.
Forget this podcast.
He's like, and I considered myself an NWPP VIP until tonight, until this episode.
I had one of their shirts in a basket, and I was gonna buy it. And you know what?
How
forget
dare
get it? Forget it. Yeah.
He's like, well, I'm no Kurt Russell. Well, you're no Goldie Hawn, Erica. And to that, I would say, touche. Touche, Henry Thomas.
Okay, now it is time for us to come up with our Letterboxd synopsises for Escape from New York. Erica, let's start with you.
Oh, great. Thanks, Ryan. I'm pretty sure this is how Letterboxd would have captured it as well.
Okay.
A delicious, hunky slice of man meat somehow gets one of his eyes poked out. I'm just as upset as you are that we can't see that second delicious, hunky man meat eye. Anyway, he goes to a gross part of New York and makes his way out. All the more hunky and sweaty and delicious.
It really made it like a diary entry, that particular. Good for
I mean,
you,
that's
Letterboxd.
How the movie resonated with them,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, it hits us all in different ways. Mm-hmm. Mark, what is your made-up Letterboxd synopsis?
In a dystopian future, the city of New York finally tackles its traffic problem by shutting off the whole city to the public and making it a federal prison. To make matters worse, they mine the bridges. So really, take the subway.
If only they could. If only they could. All right. Well, for me, my Letterboxd synopsis is this. A former war hero gets a chance at mending fences with a former colleague when he is sent on a top secret mission that just might kill him.
You forgot to say a delicious slice of hunky man meat war hero.
That's true. That's true.
You can
did they mend fences
right.
though?
Did they? I don't know. He gets it. Look, he gets a chance. Yeah. He gets a chance. You know.
The other Letterboxd synopsis is: what does it take to return one terrific mixtape? One man's quest to return a terrific mixtape.
Cabby had so many mixtapes, like at home, like in his
so many,
so
available.
Many in his little derelict New York apartment or wherever he was staying. Man, he had so many. He was just trying to. Oh, one day I'm going to give these to some cool people that come in here. And
Yeah. At the very least, he gave it to a delicious hunky man meat person.
It's like, shit, guys, I left the mixtape in that cab that we took. I got to go back and get it.
Do you guys want to still be friends?
Security, this is Remy. We have confirmation from Gotham. Four, we have a kill at Mid-Harbor, south of the Battery. Two in the water, dead.
So you also have in this movie kind of like you have all the John Carpenter all-stars at this time. So
definitely
you have Jamie Lee Curtis doing the voiceover for the intro.
The rules are simple. Once you go in, you don't come out.
Donald Pleasance coming back after, of course, being in Halloween, playing the president.
God save me and watch over you all.
And of course, Tom Atkins playing Remy, who really is just hanging out, smoking cigarettes, waiting for Snake to call. That's all he's really doing. He had to stay up all night, didn't get to go home and see his kids. He's got to sit around and wait for that call.
And also Adrian Barbeau, who had just been in the fog.
Just been in the fog. You're right.
And this is easily like my introduction to Lee Van Cleef. I don't think I'd even seen The Good, Bad, and the Ugly or any of the, you know, the Sergio Leone Westerns. I know we eventually saw them.
I didn't know that he was a big star until our mother was like, oh, Lee Van Cleef. He was in a ton of old Westerns. He always played a bad guy. And I was like, oh, I had no idea. Because even as a kid, I recognized that John Carpenter movies used a lot of up-and-coming actors, people that didn't really have a big name attached to them. I mean, obviously, everyone knew who Kurt Russell was, and Isaac Hayes was a big star, but he was probably, at that time, in a sort of low point of his career. His musical career had kind of flattened out a bit, and he wasn't in really a lot of movies at the time.
I think the person I was most familiar with is probably like Ernest Borgnine and definitely Harry Dean Stanton. Like Harry Dean Stanton was like probably outside of Kurt Russell. That was the person that I actually knew because we used to watch Alien all the time too. So I was very familiar with him. One other person that we should mention too in Carpenter's cast is Frank Doubleday, who plays Romero.
They touch me, he dies. If you're not in the air in 30 seconds, he dies. If you come back in, he dies.
He comes in with the proper negotiation tactic of he knows exactly what he wants. He's not going to back down. Whatever you want to say, I'm just going to go ahead and do this. Just going to, if we were watching this podcast, you'd see my fingers saying, like, close your mouth. There is no negotiation. Get back in that chopper.
I'm ready to talk.
19. 18.
What do you want?
17. 16.
Let's go. Let's go.
One thing that we didn't learn until, I didn't learn about until Escape from LA came out, essentially, was we missed a big section of the opening, but everybody missed the big opening scene because there was a big scene where Snake Plissken gets caught.
Right.
And he is robbing a bank and gets captured and gets brought in. So when Escape from LA came out, that's when they put out this deluxe DVD of Escape from New York, which I still own. And it has a little comic book in it. And it's, you know, comic book of Snake Plissken. And, you know, all this stuff was making me so excited to see Escape from LA.
I remember seeing the poster for it. And of course, being super excited because love this movie. Thought, hey, it's John Carpenter's back. Kurt Russell's back. Escape from LA. It's basically the exact same plot as Escape from New York, but in a different setting. But
now with more waves.
Well, that's the thing. When I went to the movie theater, I saw a poster.
More sweet waves.
And there was a picture as part of the montage poster was him on a surfboard. And I thought, oh, no. Maybe I'm going to wait on this one. And I didn't see it until it came out on video.
Oh, really? Oh, no. Yeah. I went and saw it. I was so jazzed for it. Okay, yeah, well, I mean, yeah, he does ride a wave on the poster.
And he rides a wave in the movie. After being shot in the leg with an arrow, and he still catches a wave. And this is early CGI. I feel like this is the nearly new world Escape from LA episode all of a sudden. But...
Well, I mean, we might as well fit it in while we're here. I mean, and what's funny about Escape from LA is that you look at the effects. We watched Escape from New York, and the effects for that, like the kids weren't calling it out, which the kids always do when we watch movies, old movies, quote unquote, from like the 80s and 90s. And they're always calling out the bad effects.
Right.
And they didn't really say much about this one.
Well, they know better.
I'm real cool about it. Well, they normally are like, this is such bad CGI. And I have to go, well, this isn't actually CGI. What you're seeing is... Anyway.
Do you know how hard your uncle and I had to work to record this back in the day? You kids are so ungrateful. You can just pop it right in whenever you want and watch it.
We probably had to record... We probably recorded it too and had to like... rewind to a certain, wasn't at the very beginning of the tape, we had to kind of find it somewhere in there. So
I'm sure,
but yes, most of the time I will pause it and I will tell them exactly what the effect is, and I'm like, it's not CGI because they didn't do a lot of effects in computer, and that's what makes the effects in Escape from New York actually, I think, work really well, and they hold up to a certain extent. Obviously some of the computer stuff looks dated and everything else, but the effects actually look really good, and they're done by Corman. They're done at the lumber yard. As R.J. Kaiser told us, they like used paint to look like rippling water. They built miniatures. They did all this stuff and mixed all the stuff together. And yet when you see Escape from L.A. and he's like surfing and he's so obviously it looks like one of those beach blanket bingo kind of movies where Kurt Russell's like trying to like steady himself on the board. And then he high fives Peter Fonda and you're like, what?
What is that?
Tsunami, snake.
Tsunami, woo!
But if in that surfing scene in Escape from L.A. he was surfing with Annette Funicello, then we would have had something there.
If she had, like, coasted by on another wave and been like, well, hey, yeah, just salute as Erica just did. That would have been really sweet. That would have been
Yes, it would have.
But back to Escape from New York. I think this movie is almost unimpeachable, but I will say one thing that I have always had a bit of an issue with, which is this movie was written when Carpenter was going to film school. Mm-hmm. But one thing they didn't change when they did the rewrite is the date in which it's set. And I rewatched the deleted scene today just because it had been a while since I'd watched it. And when they steal money, they have two bags. And the bags, they open it up, they look like credit cards with the symbol for the U.S. police force. I guess that's credits or whatever they're using now. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a time where they have completely switched over currency, where they fix the subways go from city to city. They cross the country.
Mm-hmm.
The movie itself is set in 97. And we're even shooting it, once you shoot it in 81, you're like, take all that stuff away that I just mentioned away. It's already cut out. But that just feels like in 16 years, this is going to happen. Like, I mean, I realize in 1981, it feels like, well, that's a good distance away. But this is my issue with a lot of sci-fi movies. And this is not exactly sci-fi, but sort of steers a little bit that way. Set it further away. Like, set it in a further time. You know, I just don't understand the time frame. 16 years is not enough.
Mm. Well, I would say the 16 years, it works to its advantage in some ways. And that is, while some things in the future are so, so far in the future, like you talked about the money and you talk about even some of the technology is like so futuresque, but yet cars are mostly the same and gliders are mostly the same.
Sure.
Weaponry is exactly the same. So under that pretense, you could say, oh, in 16 years, I could see some of this technology being flushed out and working. I would say that the 16 years is fine given all the things that are kind of the same, but they take some big leaps in like, by that time, we'll have cards for currency, which is like, well, that's a little too far in the future. Mm-hmm. You should dial that back and just have it be regular money. It doesn't need to be that futuristic, quite frankly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And you know, at that point, like what we have now for the escape pods for the presidents, they're so plush now. Like that was definitely more like in the 16 years. Whereas now we know the escape pods are really, really plush. They have a lot of room.
Roll nice.
But still totally orange.
All orange. Always. That's a requirement.
All orange. And still, all the secret documents are on audio tape, cassette tape. And right. They are put in a briefcase and they will be handcuffed to your arm. That's remained. That remains. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That remains. State secrets. That's where we keep them all on cassette tape. I mean, at this point, it's the security. Who has cassette tapes? You know? I mean, I know it's getting kind of cooler again and people kind of are getting more into it. But still.
The kids love them.
Mm-hmm. Kids love cassette tapes.
Yeah. Yeah. So does the government. And
that's right. Government's always been really cool. Really rad. Really neato. Really just slay.
The government is never sus.
Nope.
And one thing that will never die in the future, smoking. Everyone will keep doing that.
Still be smoking.
That's right.
Everywhere. Yeah. All places.
Yeah.
Indoor, in your car, mm-hmm. on an airplane. Smoking.
Also graffiti. People will never tire of that.
Yeah. No.
Never.
So no. Evergreen.
Past,
for sure.
Present, future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Graffiti.
Yeah. It's timeless.
Seeing live theater. Mm-hmm. Always going to be in the public consciousness.
Gonna yeah.
Always going to be our
going to be important.
Primary form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. One thing that we missed, Mark, with that old videotape, that scene with Hauk and Snake. Every time I watch that scene, it feels like I'm watching it again for the first time. It's such an excellently done scene.
It is.
Why are we talking?
I have a deal for you. You receive full pardon for every criminal action you've committed in the United States. It was an accident. About an hour ago, a small jet went down inside New York City. The president was on board.
President of what?
That's not funny, please.
I just think that scene is like one of the all-time best Carpenter scenes.
Totally agree. And am I the only one during that scene, whenever I watch it, I am listening for when he puts his glasses on the leather covering of his
yes,
desk?
Yes.
Because it makes such a unique sound that unless you ever were around one of those leather tops on a desk, mm-hmm. you wouldn't mm-hmm. know that sound. That sound mm-hmm. only comes from that. And the only reason why I know that sound is because our grandfather had one of those leather tops and it had a calendar on it and it would make that sound. Mm-hmm. That sound is probably lost on younger generations because it's sure. just it's a very unique sound. Anyway, go
oh my
on.
God, thanks for saying that I'm young because I don't know what sound you're talking about.
Who are you?
Hauk, police commissioner.
It also is because he's wearing thick frames. And also he sits back in that leather chair.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ASMR in this. That's mm-hmm. very, very satisfying.
It is.
They sent in their best man. And when we roll down the 69th Street Bridge tomorrow on our way to freedom, we're going to have their best man leading the way from the neck up.
Of course, obviously. The classic scene is when he fights in the ring. And it was fun to watch with our daughter because that scene still where he gets the bat and has the nail in it and he hits Ox Baker in the back. Ox Baker, of course, from New World's I Like to Hurt People.
Yep.
You can listen to all these episodes. You can listen to our episode on that. That's that scene when our daughter watched it, she was like, oh. It still has that effect. Mm-hmm. Like, it really does have that effect. And the bat sounds in that really have an effect. I love the way the sound is recorded in that, too, because it's very echoey. And it's not super a gory moment, but you know he just gets hit in the back of the head with that nail, and you know he's done, and it's so solid. Mm-hmm. It's so well done.
Also, I Like to Hurt People we can talk about in a nearly AFCO Embassy episode.
Well, I don't know.
It's so close.
Have fun, guys.
So
I'm just.
Close.
Oh, no. All we are is dust in the wind.
Mark, doing this podcast is keeping her on Earth. If we finish, she will disappear.
Just let me go, guys.
Yeah.
It's all good. Mm-hmm. It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, that scene, that fight scene, I remember loving it as a kid. I did remember the first time I saw it, I thought, you would bleed a lot more if you got that nail in the back of your head. But it was still a great fight scene regardless. Right. And of course, that starts to then lead up to the big chase scene across the Brooklyn Bridge at the end of the movie, which I still, it still holds up so well. I mean, it's such a well shot scene. Those cars are hauling ass across that bridge and, you know, trying to avoid the mines using the map that Brain has. It's super well done. And we've talked a lot in this pod over the last few episodes of this podcast about great chase scenes. And I would say this is one of the great chase scenes.
And a good fight scene with Kurt Russell and Isaac Hayes.
For sure.
And that just the concept of planting mines on a bridge to me as a kid was like, what? Right. That's crazy. Like, you know, I just thought that was one of the wildest things I'd ever heard of.
I said, jog right, you asshole.
But watching it again with fresh eyes, was there anything you picked up having seen it now again?
I think watching it again, I think that using matte paintings in the background is a lost art that should be returned to movies. Yeah. Because if done right, it looks really good. And even though many times you can look at it and say, oh, that's just a painting, there's a believability to it, and it can create an atmosphere that I think just CGI loses a lot of times. It, like, and I don't know that we use matte paintings much anymore. I think it's kind of a lost art. And that's really one of the things that makes this movie work so well, is really well done matte paintings, and of course great lighting in order to give it the depth and have it look like, oh wow, that's the actual city behind them, when you know it's not, but it still looks so good that you can suspend disbelief much easier than watching a CGI movie, especially CGI movies from like the early 2000s, where they didn't quite have it right and you're going, oof, that looks rough. Or, again, like we talked about at the top, a set, you know, the set for, and I hate to bring this back up, the set for Batman Returns looks good, but it's such a small set. You're like, is this like a two-street town? What is happening in this town? Right.
Mark, don't bring Daniel Waters back down on us, okay? We've already had to deal with this right once.
I think you bring it up a lot.
He is vengeful. He is vengeful, Mark.
Did we convince? I mean, I
thought we convinced Mark.
It seems to be just, I don't know, readily available on your mind a lot.
And if you keep bringing up Batman Returns in any sort of negative connotation, we're never going to get Daniel Waters back on to talk about Jake Speed.
Very true. That's true. That's
true. And we need him for our Jake Speed episode.
I don't blame him for the sets. I mean, that's a Tim Burton.
No, they did seem a little, they were a little great sets, but they did seem a little small. They didn't seem as expansive. There's a little bit of just a confluence of events that made this movie what it is. I think a huge factor was the fact that there happened to have been that fire in St. Louis. It's an enormous bonus for a movie that's only $5 million, even in 1981. That's not a huge budget. There's no way you could shoot in New York for that kind of budget at night. You know, I still think that a lot of credit needs to go to Dean Cundey as well for how quickly he would light all that stuff, and he would light streets and shoot so far with such a depth of field. And then on top of it, the fact that Corman had just assembled this special effects group to work at the lumberyard, and you had all these young guys who were hungry and had just made one movie and were like, let's do other stuff.
Yeah.
And they got themselves another job. I do want to read, while we're talking about Corman, I want to read a quote from Roger Corman interviews. This is what he said about Escape from New York.
Okay.
We did the special effects for John Carpenter's Escape from New York. We did the glider landing on top of the World Trade Center. I remember that one in particular because someone sent me a review of one of the New York critics who commented on the skill of the glider pilot. I thought, my God, does this man actually believe that somebody landed a glider atop the World Trade Center? Well, I guess our effects were pretty realistic.
Yeah. I mean, I had no doubt in my mind when I was a kid that someone actually landed a glider on top of the World Trade Center.
right.
I totally believed it. Completely believed it.
The review was from a school newspaper. That's not what Corman mentions.
I thought you were going to say the review was from Rex Reed.
he would have hated it. I'm sure he would have hated it.
Another thing that I want to say in watching it again, as impractical as it is, and it's horribly impractical, but a crossbow is a pretty badass weapon.
Yes. Yes. Hard to reload, but man.
Hard to reload. Yeah. You can only carry so many crossbows with you. Not a great weapon, but in the right setting, it looks awesome.
Yeah.
I agree. Speaking of weapons, though, there's also, talking about ASMR, dude, his gun, I love the sound of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, is that just like that gun? Or the fact that he has kind of a silencer on it? Or
yeah, I don't know. It does have a great sound to it, though. It's not a typical gunshot sound.
No, it's not. And it's like, I don't know where they grabbed that gun noise from, because you don't hear it repeated. And it's not like, you know, when you watch the spaghetti westerns that Lee Van Cleef are in, and you hear like this, it's always the same gun sound, like a rifle, pistol. It's always the same sound. And in a way, it becomes almost comforting. You're like, oh, right, I'm watching an Italian movie. And they just use the same gun sound all the time. But this one has such a unique one that you don't hear in lots of other places.
One thing that I want to also call out, and I think you'll appreciate this, is in the scene right after they go over all the weaponry that they're giving Snake before he goes to New York, and they give him the shot.
I'm going to inject you. I'll sting for a second or two.
And the assistant who gives him the shot, immediately after injecting him, turns to Hal.
That could have been Henry Thomas. That could have been Henry Thomas.
That could have been Henry Thomas right there.
Correct. No, no, good call. Good call, Mark. Good call. Yeah, no, good point. Good point.
That's all I wanted to say. So thank you.
Great call. Great call.
No, when he turns to Hulk and says, tell him, and Hulk looks back at him, there has not been a more believable, what the fuck, dude, look on a person's face ever shot on any film ever. I mean, he conveys all of the, dude, you just fucked up. What? Oh, damn it. Why did you have to say that?
Right.
Like, it's
don't say
all
that.
Those emotions in one 2-second shot of him looking back at Henry Thomas.
Because right away, what should have been Henry Thomas? I mean, now, could we go back and I don't like, you know, directors going back and reshooting, but could we just reshoot it with Henry Thomas in that role? I'm sorry to the guy who did the role originally. He was great, but can we just insert Henry Thomas? Speaking of Dystopian Summer, though, another element that I want to bring up, because I always think it's such a, you don't get to see tons of the worlds, but they've mentioned like New York now has all these different worlds that have grown with all the prisoners there, again, in only 16 years. But the Chock Full of Nuts scene, when the crazies come out, like that's another classic Carpenter scene.
Mm-hmm.
Even the music, the way the music jumps and has some of those spikes in it, and the way that the beat starts picking up, it's very reminiscent of Halloween.
Right.
The way they come out of they just come out. One guy comes out and he starts going and banging on pipes.
Right.
I mean, there's something about that that is so creepy and weird. And what I love about it is Kurt Russell's kind of looking, and he's not saying anything, not talking to anybody. And he's kind of walking around, and he's got his gun out, but they're kind of running by him, and he's kind of trying to figure out what do I do? What is happening? Where do I? He knows that they're kind of coming out of the gutters, and he's like, okay, I got to go somewhere. It's such a fish out of water moment, but it's so tense, and he thinks he's safe for a second inside the Chock Full of Nuts, and he's not. And that's really where I think we get a sense of this. How dangerous the world is everywhere you go. And it sets the stage for how bad this dystopia is that is New York. And I love the way that scene is built and plays out.
I remember when I watched it as a kid, I thought I was a little disappointed that scene ends so quickly and we don't really get back to the crazies.
Right.
Looking back at it now, though, I think if they had explored that more, I would have invariably been disappointed in what they are, because mm-hmm. you'd have to try to explain them in some way.
Sure.
And because they sure. don't, they're scarier and more of a mm-hmm. real threat. And it's not a problem that they don't come back. It's like, that was, like you said, establishing this is a very scary place, and not just for the right. kinds of people that you think would be in prison, but for how prison has turned people into these, it's created these different fiefdoms of there's the bad guys, there's the not so bad guys, and then there's people that are just batshit crazy that are living in the sewers.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever you turn, wherever you think it's safe, trust me, it's not. And I think that does a great job of setting that up. And they don't need to return to it because mission accomplished.
But I do wonder, like, does the Duke, is he scared of them when he's going to bring everybody across the bridge using Brain's map and they're going to get their freedom? Are the crazies involved? Like, or are they still just going to be living underground? You know what I mean? Yeah. How does that work? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't a part of the New York prison UN council meeting where they discussed all the different groups.
You were supposed to go to that before we recorded so you could
I couldn't make it. I was stuck in traffic. I tried. Oh, I tried my best. Sorry.
Oh,
oh no.
Damn it. No, I agree. I wouldn't want to go back to it, but it is curious, like, how does the Duke feel about them? How is that? That's the only way I would ever want that to return in some way. Like, is he afraid of them, or do they get along? Do they fear him? Do they just leave each other alone? I don't know.
So I have one final question as we wrap up this episode.
We're not doing final questions, but okay.
Which has nothing to do with Escape from New York. But I noticed that Shout Factory has announced that they're putting out a Blu-ray for Village of the Damned. Will you be buying that?
4K. They've already released a Blu-ray.
Right,
they put out a 4K.
Right.
I have the Blu-ray for Village of the Damned, and it is still in the shrink wrap. So I'm gonna...
So I would encourage you to give that one another spin. I watched it maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and it's still not a good movie, but it was way better than I remember. And the soundtrack was better than I remember. And I was like, you know, there's actually some cool stuff in here.
Yeah. I mean, I have not watched it much since we saw it in Westwood when it came out. And it was just such a letdown for me after In the Mouth of Madness, which I was like, yes, Carpenter's back. And then you see Village of the Damned, and it just was like, I don't know. It was probably more disappointing than it should have been, really. So you're right. I should go back and take a look at it. Okay, now it's time for final questions, because I know I said it wasn't going to be final questions, but since we're already here, I'm going to throw a couple final questions at you.
Okay, all right.
So Snake Plissken goes in to get the president, because they need the president to be at this Hartford Summit.
Mm-hmm.
What about the vice president?
Oh.
is he or she dead?
I mean...
Oof.
Did anyone even think about question. That?
I mean, is that not in play?
Also, is the summit in Hartford, Connecticut?
I don't know. I was just saying.
Seems like an odd place for a world summit.
Hartford summit. I don't even know if I've ever said that before.
Maybe the vice president's already there, just doing the shaking of hands, trying to be like, he'll be here soon. He's running a little bit late. Just don't worry. Appetizers are over there. We've got a frozen swan that's pouring vodka. Mix a drink. Relax. He'll be here soon. So, I mean,
yeah, I think, beam him in from the Statue of Liberty.
Sub bullet to that final question.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the vice president and you don't get kidnapped, are you upset about that?
Isn't that your opportunity? You're like, oh, well, he's captured on New York. Looks like it's up to me. Like,
I don't know. I kind of want to be kidnapped too. Like, I'm
They got denied. They got denied their vice president.
Just feels like, no one's trying to kidnap me.
Right.
I feel like I'd be obsessed. A little sad about it.
Yeah. Look, I feel like I'm a great person to kidnap.
Yeah. I'm an easy kidnap too. I'm so weak.
Do you think there was a moment in between the hijacking of the plane and the pod getting jettisoned that the vice president was like, this might be my chance to be president.
That's what I mean.
Oh, and then was like, oh, shit, he's alive?
Right.
Damn it.
Yeah, he went on such a roller coaster that night.
Right. Oh, we're assuming.
He was like, oh my God.
We're assuming that the vice president's a he?
Yeah, oh. I'm sorry. Okay. Let's just say they. Just to keep it easy.
They went on a roller coaster ride. And then they went back up another hill of the roller coaster when they thought, oh, wait, so you're telling me that they sent in a one-eyed pirate with some sort of capsule in his neck that will cause his heart to explode if he doesn't get the president back in 24 hours.
Yeah.
I still might have a chance.
Yeah.
Right. I like and my also, chances.
There was no one less attractive that we could almost heart stop and put a capsule in their neck. Was there someone uglier that we could right. sacrifice for this? We had to take a hunky guy and deal
with
that?
We have no ugly prisoners. War hero / prisoners.
I find that hard to believe as the vice president.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't have asked Brain to do this?
Come on.
My God, no one cares if his heart stops. Sorry, Mrs. Dean Stanton.
Oh my Lord. Rest in peace, Harry.
Apologies, Mrs. Dean Stanton.
Oh my God. All right. Snake took out Oxbaker, but then he escapes New York. So the local New York Fights League is down two champs. So what happens next week?
The vice president steps in. Time to shine.
They were a former champ in the ring.
Time to shine.
Yeah.
They weren't kidnapped because they're so strong.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
I was wrong. They weren't weak. They were too strong.
Plus, they're shifting it to MMA fighting. It's time to step up their game.
Yeah.
So
They'd spent a lot. They had nothing but time.
Also, I just imagine Ox has an understudy who's like sort of growing out their mustache and they're like trying to bulk up and they're shaving their heads. So
trying to grow up to 7 feet tall.
Just trying.
Do you think that Ox wore that fur Tashiki outside of the ring, or was that strictly for the ring?
Ooh, I hope that was just a
costume
for the
fight, or was that just like his
If you're gonna need to blend in with the crazies, you know, just all of a sudden, like if you have to, like if the fight ends super late at night, you just want to go out there and pretend you're one of them. So
When you're Ox, you just blend it in. Just blend. Like, are you Ox? He's like, no, mon ami. Oh, sorry. Excuse me, Frenchman.
He just blends right in. They're just like, oh, that's just one of us.
Shoot,
just
sorry. You look like Ox. He's like, sacre bleu. They're like, oh, my mistake. We're crazy, but we also understand basic French.
All right, so we already found a spot for Henry Thomas in this movie. But where would you cast yourself in this movie?
Oh no.
Myself. I would be an understudy for Henry Thomas's role, for sure. But assuming that they needed me somewhere else, I'm pretty sure that I could take Tom Atkins' role.
Sure.
You just talk on a CB, you sit in the control room, you smoke a lot of cigarettes.
Yeah, smoke a lot.
I'm pretty sure I could take that one on. I don't think I could deliver it with the same panache that he has. But
and who could, you know?
Fair. But I think I could do it in a pinch.
Erica?
I think I'm just like crazy number seven. You know, they're just tucking me in the corner. Very little makeup needed. No hair and makeup. They're just like, hey, get over there. Take off your glasses. Let that wonky eye just do its work. No lines for you. Go for it. And I think it's just a natural fit.
Okay. All right.
Ryan, what about you?
This is tough. I mean, I want to say Brain, but the fact is I'm not honestly that smart. So that won't work.
You're not smart enough to read a script about a smart guy?
You don't think you're Cabbie?
Mixtapes. I think I'd have to be Cabbie. Have to be Cabbie. I just don't know if I also have his general genial disposition.
You have all the mixtapes, right?
I do. I'm not as big a fan of the Bandstand theme as he is, but you know, I would ironically throw that into a mixtape somewhere, so that would be fun. So you know, after that. But after that is Exmal Deutschland. It's the it goes really. I just go the other way. You're like, what? Oh, this took a turn.
A song everybody loves and then 18 songs nobody's heard of. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then we go real deep into some German goth. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yep. It's Cabby.
You guys into this, right?
He's a different kind of cabby, but what do I know? I'm just crazy number seven and I'm chewing on a toe that I found in the street. They're like, I'm sorry, crazy number seven. You can't sing songs. You don't have any lines.
You don't. You're not even supposed to be in the scene.
Also, where did you get that toe? That was not part of the set dressing.
That looks like a real toe.
Yeah, I brought it myself. Brought my own toe.
Did you get that? Would you be against Snake Plissken returning for a third movie?
No. Maybe he could escape from, I don't know, Tampa or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
Why not?
Turn Tampa into a prison.
Yeah. Escape from Key West.
Some people say would say they already have. Sorry, Tampa. I apologize, Tampa. You're a great town.
But what if Snake Plissken came back and escaped from Steeman?
Oh, there we go. There we go.
There we go.
That could work. That could work. Ooh. Freeze all those steamy prisoners.
Steaming, like, basically once they get into Steaming, it's like dead end driving, and they're like, well, this is where you live.
Yeah, that's it.
And they're like, look, I want to turn on my towel and get my keys. Like, what do you mean?
No.
There's no keys.
Sorry.
We don't have any keys.
Also, turn in the towel if you want. Who cares? Right. As long as you can be out.
This is where you are. Here's some, like, meal. Here's some meal cards.
Do you want your issue towel?
Yeah. Or not, either way.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You're here now. This is where you live. And Snake's like, we got to get out. I'm going to bust everybody out of Steeman. That would be pretty good. That would be pretty good. Well, see, there you go.
There we go. Writes itself.
John Carpenter, you can literally direct that from your house, which is how he directs now. Well, that is it from us in this episode of Nearly New World. From our Sci-Fi July presents Dystopian Summer. We hope you're having a good time listening to our episodes. We have another episode of a dystopian movie released by New World Pictures coming to you next week. So stick around for that. If you want to listen to any of our other episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. You can find all of our episodes there, our articles, and our t-shirts. Go ahead and buy a t-shirt. That would help us out. If not that, though, just tell somebody about the show, spread the word, and we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast. Bye, everybody. Thank you.